Welcome to the MetaView Podcast, a podcast where we ask people shit
and they answer.
Let's get into it.
Do you believe it's morning? I'm alive, but that's the last thing on my mind.
There we go. I think it all works. It all works. Yay. Welcome, welcome, Magenta.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm good.
That's good to hear.
How are you today?
Pretty good, pretty good. So what did you think about the autonomous podcast idea?
I dig it. It's very metagamey. it winds around all the podcast things. And it's just an interesting game. Like, I'd be really curious to follow something like that. Instead of having the one person's frame, you would be you'd be traveling along different people's frames and perspectives. It'd be really interesting. Like, you would get way more themes than you normally would if you had one person running it.
Yeah, and I especially like the idea of spreading it into two directions. So we could have one going into your direction. Like, both directions would be about changing the world, but I guess yours would be more practical than ours, which would be more focused on technology until it drifts away, I guess. All right, let's try it. Let's see how it goes.
Cool. Thanks for inviting me to play with you, by the way.
Happy to. Let's give people a quick intro on what we were talking about.
Cool.
So I picked up this idea of starting a podcast that sort of runs itself, where you interview someone and then that next person interviews someone else and the next person interviews the next person, and it just rolls on from there. And I took this idea, I call it the Autonomous Podcast, and added another idea on top of it, which is that we can use one episode to start two podcasts, and we can have the Autonomous Podcast A and the Autonomous Podcast B. And Magenta likes the idea. So yeah, we're going to try it out.
Here we go. Do
you have any thoughts you want to share that?
Just that I'm excited about this idea. In general, I get frustrated with how the internet has walled gardens and people make these little bubbles around how people interact. So I think it's cool that it kind of weaves between existing podcasts and structures and who has who's controlling the frame and stuff. I think that's cool.
Awesome. Yeah, let's try it out. So, yeah, I guess we should both kind of talk about the projects, but yeah, please go first. Tell us about the Bloom Network.
Sure. So Bloom Network has been around since about 2008. We were previously part of a parent company, I guess, called Evolver. And then we pretty much split in 2014, but we officially set up Bloom in 2016. So basically, Bloom Network is kind of a real-world DAO, and we've been waiting for the tech to be ready to be able to formalize that more exchange with each other. And there's basically local Bloom chapters all over the world that host events and media about what we call regenerative cultures. So generally, that refers to ways of being that are the opposite of extractive industry. So rather than kind of practices that take more resources and energy and well-being from a system and kind of siphon it off to extract value, it's the practice of creating systems and structures and ways of working and being with the earth and each other that are mutually nourishing and create the capacity for more life, more diversity, more anti-fragility. So less abstractly, local chapters are doing things there's a lot of citizen science stuff going on, actually. People are doing something called bioremediation to use plants and fungi to absorb toxins from where soil has been contaminated in urban lots that could grow food, for example. So they're testing how to pull that out so that there can be free food available for people in places where food scarcity is an issue. Or other things soil sponge restoration, where you're mitigating floods because that risk is increasing with climate change and stuff. So there are ways to, either in a decentralized way in suburban neighborhoods, to have everyone kind of restore their soil's ability to absorb water, so there's less stormwater runoff everywhere. or you can do it in a more centralized way, like creating a really large scale infrastructure, like water park or sink. So like, if that had been put in place for like Hurricane Sandy or something, you would have saved like many millions of dollars. Kind of like direct action stuff to stabilize climate and restore social equity, more equitable social relationships with each other economically, with our bodies and the way that we approach industry and stuff. So we also are helping people do like localized production, learn better conflict resolution techniques, kind of like connect the dots across these different movements that tend to be siloed, either like politically or aesthetically, like the way they communicate. Because like around the world, there's like tens of thousands of projects working on this, and like all the stuff works. It's just the way they organize is decentralized and often collaborative across many different crews and communities. And that just doesn't plug in with the funding infrastructures of like the UN and startup ecosystems and the nonprofit industrial complex and stuff. So we're trying to connect those people more with each other, and then also in like a mycelial way, bridge to those institutional finance puddles so that we can convert like where power is aggregated in kind of unhealthy or problematic ways right now into decentralized grassroots networks that are really have more capacity to address the problems than the way that the top-down structures are trying to do it. So it's been really cool to intersect with the Ethereum community who kind of, I think similarly on a structural level and have really been building the tools to handle the finance and organizing that'll really be highly applicable to all these kinds of situations, especially when it comes to like international collaborating. It's just going to be much more efficient to than trying to translate currency across banks and international borders and stuff.
What are the next steps? Like, what are the major milestones that you have coming up? I've actually read the DAO canvas that you wrote today, and it sounds pretty awesome.
Oh, cool! Thanks. Yeah, I'm like waiting in, trying to. We're setting up our DAO, our first kind of DAO. We have a few phases planned out, but to get folks used to the technology, because we're mostly not tech nerds, so people really need like handhold steps to how to use Web3. So we're gonna do some kind of an initial test case of setting up like our token will be called Flowers, or Flow for short, FLO. Which that was by Nelson Molina, came up with that idea. He's a blockchain developer based in an eco village in France. He's super cool. So yeah, we're going to give a go, try getting that set up, get folks used to being able to put in proposals for how we use network resources and to pool our resources together so that the people doing the labor of keeping the network interconnected and the infrastructure for kind of collaborating across cities and regions and helping each other, it's kind of like a peer incubator, but to make sure that we have the capacity for the people to like keep the rhythms going and stuff, and make that more transparent and accessible so anyone can participate in that. Yeah, we're going to give a go at people being able to basically do sort of the equivalent of bounties and proposing where we allocate resources and so forth. So that hopefully that makes our like finances transparent. And yeah, so November 16th was kind of our deadline to try to get a real live one going. I think we might realistically test for a few weeks first, kind of do a barrage of try to break things, get people used to it where they don't have to pay the transaction fees, because like we don't really understand how to move it to XDAI yet. We're looking at starting it on Aragon. So that's all on the DAO side, but we're also like officially launching the Local Blooms program. Probably by the beginning of next year, we might do it earlier. We haven't really, since we became Bloom Network, put the call out to like really invite people to start local chapters and participate and get involved where they live and online. So we made a kind of automated process for people to get started easily, so they don't have to wait for us to respond to them and everything. So yeah, that's going to be launching soon. So we've been just kind of preparing for the possibility that that grows really quickly, because when we first did this in 2008, it basically like grew so fast it broke. Like within, I think, a couple weeks, like 200 cities signed up to do it, and the leadership wasn't really prepared for that, like on a lot of levels, like logistically or experienced organizers in terms of like the hierarchical approach to allowing the community to kind of self-direct and also support what was happening. It really needed a peer-to-peer infrastructure to work. And so, yeah, things broke down culturally and logistically pretty quickly. So those of us that found each other through that period kind of like hung in there and kind of like, okay, well, how do we make a structure that's not going to break when that happens? So that's where we're at right now, is really like trying to flick the switch on for the first time, see if this time like it stays together and boom.
Right. Yeah, you got the peer-to-peer infrastructure now, and so hopefully it works better.
Yeah.
What kind of projects do the local chapters do?
Yeah, so some of them are doing citizen science stuff like I described. There's one chapter that does a yearly social entrepreneurship festival. They're in Los Mochis, Mexico. So they get together people who have like wellness businesses and community gardening training stuff, and I forget all the kinds of things they bring together, but it's like eco-social things and creating more financial autonomy among people. And they're also building a network of 27 eco parks across the city, kind of to prevent development companies from building kind of weird infrastructure projects on top of what the city had allocated for like community commons, public spaces. So they're kind of mobilizing as quickly as they can to make sure that those stay allocated to that. So they're setting up like a recreation space for sports and like a space for educational workshops. And they're like teaching people to garden so that they can grow food in their, like on their balconies or in their yards if they have them, that kind of thing. There's a couple of eco-villages in the network. So I think in Costa Rica, there's a couple of them. There's actually a network in Costa Rica of several eco-villages that are building a physical bridge between a bunch of communities. So they're kind of going to co-launch with us on developing a local DAO to help make that happen so that we can test run having our local and federated, like international membership integrated, and how the local DAO and kind of like mother DAO or mesh DAO interact. So that'll be super cool. Their lead organizer actually works for Giveth. Danielle Ganetti is her name. What else are they doing? There's a tea house in California. So they have events and art and music, and people, they have like a healing room so healers can book time to work with clients, and they sell teas, and they also make Shizandra berry and reishi honeys and give them away to cancer patients. Apparently the reishi kind of like helps pick up the excess radiation molecules from the body and mitigates the kind of side effects of the radiation when people are going through treatments like that for cancer. And I think they both, Shizandra berry and reishi, like help with immune system stuff, so people get less sick while their system is like really taxed throughout all that. So that's pretty cool. There's a chapter in Virginia that just joined, a Portsmouth Creative Collective, and they're basically doing a bunch of really cool mutual aid projects. They're mostly working class. I mean, everyone is across the network, sort of, or like artist class, if that's the thing. They're making boxes, like food boxes for people, like so you can grow plants in them, and they're painting them and giving them away, like already planted with food in them. So it's a way to kind of bring joy and arts and also food sovereignty. And they have a gallery space, again, that they're hosting events and such out of in Virginia. So they're kind of just getting going. They're a coalition of a bunch of existing projects. Coalitions are like a really common thing for local chapters to do, actually, because we try to like build that kind of infrastructure and connectivity across what's already happening in a region so that people are less siloed and there's more resource flow like across the different kind of specific sorts of projects that people need in order to create like healthy, thriving communities that have the resources they need to, you know, be well, but also to create like more beauty and awesomeness. There's a couple local chapters that are kind of more focused a little bit on like a corporate side. In terms of like, we developed this basically like a design lab or a generative design lab, like, and consultancy thing so that we can go into a corporation and help them like transform a development pipeline so that it works with localized production facilities and kind of the cultural and leadership like hierarchy changes that would allow for more equitable and healthy like development and sales of their products and so forth. So that's like kind of the other direction that local chapters go sometimes.
Right, yeah, that sounds awesome. Yeah, so there's a lot of diversity in what kind of things that the people do.
Yeah, they totally have autonomy. As long as it's like loosely related with regenerative cultures and is fairly systems oriented, you know, at least open to the importance of the interconnectivity of these kinds of things and open to connecting with the network and sharing their knowledge with people coming from diverse other perspectives and projects and stuff. As long as it's kind of, they're on board with that. Yeah, they pretty much have autonomy to focus on whatever they want to.
And how do these people find you?
God, I don't even know. I swear it's like half just magical. They like listen through their like mycelial connection with the earth and somehow freaking find us, because we don't do marketing. Like, I'm so far, I'm the only person who's talking a lot on podcasts. Hopefully that changes, because there's like a lot of really freaking incredible leaders and artists and creative people in the network. But yeah, man, I don't know. Like listening, like it's really weird. It's almost like a direct like acoustic communication infrastructure in a really weird way that exists there right now. It's pretty neat.
That's awesome. Yeah, we're doing like pretty similar things that I want a metagame to be doing.
Yay!
Except that in metagame I see this like mostly as a phase two thing after we set up this initial like infrastructure and that sort of thing. But I actually see these projects as fairly similar. It's just that we are targeting a different audience, basically. Where you are right now directly targeting the people who are doing these things, we are at least starting with the people that are in crypto, who are building these decentralized technologies.
That's super amazing. It's been so fun to get to learn more about Metagame, and I totally want to like mesh together in whatever way that makes sense. And it's been fun, yeah, playing Metagame.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so far we had like players and guilds, but I've been thinking more and more about the concept of alliances, and I definitely see like Bloom being as this first sort of alliance. So yeah, the alliance is basically just a collective of guilds and players, and yeah, Bloom Network sounds like it would be the first real alliance.
We are so down. I can't believe your like token is called Seeds 2. It's just funny. And if we go with the pink and purple one, it's pretty much, they're really close to two of our brand colors too. It's like, we're just matchy-matchy.
Awesome. And how did you get into all of this?
Mushrooms made me do it, pretty much.
That's when I came up with Metagame.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It was an internal project for the Meta Cartel. But yeah, after a week of conferences and meetups after ETH Berlin, we all went to this forest. There was a lake, a hill, and we were there all day. It was amazing. There was a lot of hiking to be done. The main problem was that there was 40 of us, and we were all like, you know. And so you can imagine the kind of chaos that you get when you try to move 40 people from location to location. So like the whole day, the theme of the day was coordination problems. And yeah, by the end of the day, I turned this, what I had in mind as an internal project for structuring the Meta Cartel, I turned it into Metagame. And I called the concept a massive online coordination game. And yeah, that's how Metagame was born.
That's so beautiful. Just a tiny layer of more detail. I was previously working in kind of like a political activism group in the Bay Area, with a focus on queer women of color, primarily like lifting up the leadership of those folks, because they tend to be under like a bunch of different layers of oppression. So they kind of see, okay, these are the structural problems. But they kind of I just felt like they were kind of running into a wall with some of their approaches. And as an organization, we're kind of static since they formed in the 70s. And I didn't see that I could really help them achieve their goals with the way that things were set up. And around that time I started, and also the subject matter was like really, really, really heavy. around the time like I started getting, like I went to Burning Man for the first time and started exploring transformational festivals and meeting like healing communities and stuff, which have the like really problematic race dynamics in the US actually. And oh man, the spiritual commodification stuff is like really gross and weird. It's like people are going to things looking for transformational culture and like to create alternate things a lot of times, but instead of practical workshops and information at the festivals that have workshops, it's like weird new age total bullshit. It's like like chakras and like other, I don't even know. I've been so outside of that world for a while. But somehow through that, I did start learning about like indigenous healing practices and elders that had a interesting frameworks for healing trauma, for example. And I came across Evolver and started meeting people who were talking about all these different facets of why society is, at least in America, I mean, I think America's pretty like more fucked than Europe or other places. I don't know. I mean, all places have their things, but it was just a lot of people sharing about, yeah, the different possibilities that could shift, but it was a more hopeful kind of organizational container, at least in terms of the people I was meeting were like really talking about what would it take to transform things on an institutional level, integrated with like the personal healing or processing and supporting each other through that'll be required. And so it was kind of like all of the things I was interested in and just the tactical, like knowing things didn't have to be this frustrating for so many people in the world, and like, well, let's just fucking do it. And just met people who seem to have like a really high capacity to be able to do that together. And then so some of the leadership tools I learned in that activist group were really helpful for, because when I came into Evolver, it was really apparent that the leadership was like problematic in terms of like sex and race and class issues. It was like a bunch of older white dudes running it. And I just kind of like a punk and like came in there and was like, hey, like, why isn't XYZ happening? Like people are offering you 40 hours full-time free of their week to like solve the problems of the social network website they were using was like really buggy and stuff. So I just kind of like kept poking into the process and like, hey, what's going on over there? And eventually sort of was able to adjust the communication dynamics so that the organizers were able to hear each other and organize to ultimately like achieve what we were trying to do, just like eliminate the friction.
Right. Then like after these problems, the thing went into its own way and then you started Bloom Network. How exactly did that forking work?
Well, the company actually pivoted before we did. They basically like hired a new CEO because they had a hard time figuring out a sustainable financial model for the thing. It was like a social network coupled with a media site. And then this like on the ground local chapters thing emerged. Sean Parker actually funded that. I think it actually emerged because Sean Parker offered to give them money, but under the condition that it was a nonprofit, so it would be a tax write-off. So I'm not honestly sure the guys were like prepared for this to happen, and the people were meeting each other online and talking about their experiences would want to meet in person and like do events and stuff. So maybe there were some vision conflicts there. But they couldn't make the corporate side of the company work financially and ran out of money. So they hired a new CEO who pivoted the company to basically be like a new age herbal medicine company and like sold all these weird, like kitschy new age products to our email list that we had collected over many years for community activism. We were like, what? So it like really just destroyed our community. Actually, we'll be curious when we put out the call to Bloom if we'll like find some of those people who like did a hard left away from the entity at that point because they were like, what the fuck is this? Like, see you guys later. So that made it really, I mean, it was just really clear. We tried to work it out with them for a while and be like, look, A, we can solve your financial problems because your market is all here. Like, just listen to us to what products we actually want and what products we're making and services through the network that we all need. And then also like, here's how to address your communication issues with the kind of race and like commodification dynamics that are not what your audience base wants to hear or engage with. But it just, eventually it was like, these guys are never gonna get it. so we just have to peel off. And so, yeah, pretty, it was like just like unanimous consent of seceding, basically.
And did you take the mailing list?
No, they locked us out of access to it. So we...
Oh, damn. So you had to start from scratch, basically.
Yeah, it was like, I think the mailing list at that time was like 80,000 or maybe 100,000 by the time they like intentionally tried to do heavy-duty marketing to boost it up. And then we had saved probably around 5,000 email addresses to the local chapters had saved their lists enough or had their own lists that we could kind of pull those together. But at that point, a lot of the damage was already done. So even communicating with those folks, because it took us a couple of years to like find the new name. So I think we lost another like 2,000 people through that process. So yeah. Well, I mean, once we get started again, we'll probably like do a concerted effort to, yeah, like grow the email list and kind of do old school marketing a little bit just to help more people find these sorts of things and participate. Because like that's the gap. It's like the stuff is happening everywhere, but unless you're in one of those underground subcultures, like you really can't find it because all of our media and communication infrastructures, like the big companies, are driven by commercial motives. Or like nonprofits have to pay money to access the channels and boost visibility, unless you're really good at, you know, kind of mobilizing through Twitter and so forth, and just happen upon the right conditions of something really blowing up. So yeah, routing around that and kind of using the old systems, but also building new ones that are based on consent and using communication technologies that aren't designed to manipulate people and that aren't as gameable. I think that's a lot of the problems we're seeing right now with like Facebook and Google are like pretty easy to game if you have lots of money. So, I mean, from my perspective, there's like geopolitical warfare happening right now and just corporate manipulation and like people don't even understand. I mean, there's like books about this, but like the AI and these companies' business structures are programmed to make money. So the AI is almost like dumb AI, like it has these metrics that are kind of impoverished and end up like replicating bias and destruction and blah, blah, blah. So that's why I'm like really, really excited to learn more about the decentralized tools that exist and really help the UX and user adoption, because I think these are the sorts of things that will help us route around those power dynamics.
Right. Do you plan on building a new kind of a news feed?
Not so much. I kind of think like that concept of having a centralized news feed is not quite what needs to happen. I'm trying to finish a blog post about this, like mesh platforms, like a concept of mesh platforms where you have communication is anchored in real world action and real world communities, place-based communities. And it's physical, like in person, for real things, in harmony with the earth and each other and stuff. And possibly not even through one URL. Like one of the interface design things we're talking with one of our new chapters in upstate New York is possibly having a tree as a map that you could embed on any website. So that portal doesn't have to live on like one URL or one organization. You could even, the control and design of it could be a decentralized team. And that would show you the connectivity of projects and networks. And, you know, you could find what interest point you want to delve into and then, you know, find groups who are working on it or resources relevant to it. And just kind of like connect in with the mycelial mesh in a way that inspires you. And again, have that, like that, those portals could go to any URL or community, in person, whatever. It doesn't have to like, and also I think the other element of that is like the diversity of interface. Like if you have millions of people on one interface that looks a certain way and has a certain set of parameters and ways it's built to work, it's such a like, not diverse cognitive and aesthetic and other kind of layers of experience. So if, for example, even just if we look at like Bloom Network and Metagame, if you have like a mesh where you have, like you say, alliances and people are interfacing between these different communities and their cultures and the ways that they are creating and supporting each other, creating together, et cetera, you just have like this exponential, I don't know, explosion of creativity and resourcefulness, and you're less pigeonholed into boxes, sort of.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking about a similar idea with having this like a mini map that shows like a tree structure to all the different links that are on the website.
And is that different?
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to ask if that's different from the skill tree that you were talking about.
The skill tree is just like a knowledge map, so it wouldn't be like linking to like initiatives, but more like strictly for specific knowledge. It will be linking out to different websites, but yeah, just about knowledge itself. And I was thinking about what a newsfeed system would look like in this new sort of system. And like, we are all in Discord, and like right now it works because there's not so many of us. And then for the people that aren't in Discord, that don't like that, find it too noisy, we have the newsletter. But as you move to like having a lot of people, then the newsletter becomes centralizing. And so what I was first thinking about is that it would be like a sort of a public inbox where you could plug in different newsletters, and to just like it would be a feed of newsletter posts. But then I thought about it more, and it was like, yeah, but that it's still like newsletters, it's not people, and like the feed should be by the people themselves, not just the people and projects who have the newsletters. And then I was looking at Discord, and I was like, yeah, but Discord is kind of a news feed. Like, I get all the important information in Discord. It's just that it's all jumbled together, because it's basically, it's news and comments all together meshed into one. So there's no filtration system. And then like, but yeah, we have SourceCred, which like takes all the messages that are upvoted the most, and it puts them on a separate list. And then that's the idea I had. Like, I call it the value feed, and it will basically be filtering messages from Discord based on the amounts of emojis that they receive. And then you could even like filter news based on the emojis. Yeah, if it's the emoji with 100, like, then it might be like a conclusion to a discussion, or yeah. But yeah, filter news by emojis. That would be interesting.
I love that. I love so much how Metagames Discord is structured, and just learning from you and being able to talk with someone who has a similar like artistic creative brain about this kind of the design and community dynamics of this sort of thing. It's been really, really wonderful to meet you.
Yes, you too. And yeah, I just suggested this to SourceCred community a few days ago, and I'm looking forward to getting more feedback, because yeah, that's as far as I got with thinking about what the feed would look like in this new world where everybody's moving to Discord, which are like private communities.
If this is helpful, one of the kind of underlying documents, I guess, to the initial Evolver network and where we're kind of thinking still with Bloom was a white paper called the Augmented Social Network. I can't remember all the details, but I like vaguely remember one of the their approaches to news feed was having people be able to use keywords for what topics they were interested in, so that they would get content related to that and not have the fire hose of like all of the topics, but have an augmented intelligence in the system that would also help learn. So for example, if someone thought they were looking for a certain topic, but they didn't yet have the vocabulary to know what the like related words were, or if the augmented intelligence was able to see that there was like a kind of related thing, but in a very different bucket, that would be synergistic. So kind of helping the community learn and make connections like that, but also to kind of, yeah, mitigate the information flow in ways that were often really like constructive and nourishing. Yeah, are there people in the blockchain space and Ethereum community who are looking at integrating AI and augmented intelligence with this sort of thing? Or are those systems inherently more centralized than what you're all trying to build?
I don't know. There was a lot of projects back in 2017 which were like, blockchain, AI. But they were like, they were all scams. Yeah. All of the AI and blockchain projects that I've seen were just like buzzword projects that were like raising money for the ICO. I don't remember any actually good one.
And I've had a conversation with Brendan Maher from MIT Media Lab. He's one of the advisors to the LAO. He was talking about, like, if Bloom were to create a protocol for some of the, I don't know, like, sorry, like regenerative economic sort of exchanges happening across the network so that we could better connect resources across different communities and be able to have more flow of the different tokens we were using and so forth, kind of like interoperate with each other. But he thought that and kind of a federated, related to your word of alliances, I guess, system of DAOs potentially being, like, it's more like one of the things he was excited about the potential of autonomous organizations and smart contracts and so forth, is being able to potentially create more sophisticated structures of automation that were more symbiotic and less problematic in terms of like being run by one corporation whose purpose is to increase the value to their shareholders or something like that.
Yeah, we need more projects like that. That's for sure.
I know one of the things you mentioned you wanted to touch on was the gap between people who are not tech savvy climbing onto Web3.
Oh yeah, I also wanted to ask you, like, in the Bloom community, like, how many of people are in crypto from before, and for how many of them will this DAO be the first interaction with the crypto world?
Nearly 100% of them.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like, I made the instruction document for our DAO for like the first stage of it, where it's really simple, because later we want to do participatory budgeting and more like a community currency sort of thing, like grassroots economics or something. But for now, it's like a lot simpler. But yeah, the instruction document like has like using plain speak to walk people through how to install MetaMask. I'm trying to document as I have been onboarding onto these things, what tools I'm finding, what is an accessible intro that makes sense to me that I can direct people to, what are the potential problems. Like, there's a, you know, if you get an error message, like, that error message is actually like always popped up right now. You can just ignore it for the most part. Like, you know, refresh the page. Like, here are the common problems you run into. Usually just refresh, or you might actually have a problem if this is what's going on. And oh man, like trying to, I don't know. Anyway, it's been pretty funny. I'm like, you guys are not kidding that the UX is still difficult.
Yes.
So it's definitely going to be awkward. Yeah, I'd be curious how many people do actually want to use the DAO at first, or if we'll have like a small set of people kind of experimenting, kind of a bridge. You know, I'm sure once we set it up, what I would like to do is also invite people from the Ethereum community to participate in our DAO so that they have a portal to the kind of real world practical stuff. I'm happy to mesh with Metagame however that makes sense on that too. But where was I going with that? We'll probably set up like a weekly session to help folks onboard, where people can have a real person from a network that they trust walking, and people who are familiar with anchored in a like grounded space that aren't necessarily tech speak people, who can just, you know, answer questions, walk people through it, have a real use case that is like relevant, that they'll help them understand the connection between the infrastructure and what the potentials of it are, like how to use it. Because I would also say, I would guess as much as 60% of our community are interested in using cryptocurrency and Web3 tools, but it's impossible for them to filter signal from noise, at least since like 2017 and all the ICO bullshit. it's just like impossible to know where to look online, like what's safe, like, yeah, what tool to use, what's the difference between like the different blockchain ecosystems and so forth. And there's unfortunately a fair amount of bullshit in the ecology space too, in terms of blockchain tech and cryptocurrencies that have really problematic token dynamics and stuff, but are like targeted toward people who want to use them for like farm projects or mutual aid kind of things. So yeah, I think like pretty much there's no way around a kind of in-person, so to speak, thing. Like we should, why don't actually do like crypto, I think it's called a crypto party. Is that what that's called? Where you like teach people to use encrypted tools and safe browsing and that kind of thing. I think that would be really productive for people too.
Yeah, that sounds cool. Yeah, we'd be happy to join.
Awesome. It'd make more sense for people if it was, if those gatherings were a combination of non-blockchain native people and people who were working in the Ethereum community and stuff. Because Cardano's culture is so freaking inspiring too. Like, I think that'll help people make the connection in a good way too. Like, oh, this is a really parallel community that has similar values and creativity and like trippiness. Like, I don't know. I mean, it's just the structure of Ethereum itself is really trippy to me, but yeah, I think there's a lot of synergy between the two communities' values and such.
Yeah, we should definitely make a joint meetup. Comment back on what you said that you're wondering what the turnout rate would be. And I would say it would probably be low because like even crypto natives don't tend to really vote much in a DAO. So I'm guessing that people who have additional hurdles of not understanding the technology will probably vote even less. So yeah, hopefully that doesn't discourage you. I personally don't think voting matters that much because when it matters, then people do come and vote. But on most issues, like it doesn't matter. And like people are fine with whatever other people pick. That's what we have in the Meta Cartel. Like, a lot of the time people are like, yeah, how do we increase the voter turnout? Because like some proposals would receive like one or two votes. But then we notice that when there's a contentious proposal, then there all of a sudden there's a bunch of votes. So yeah, people vote when it feels like it matters.
Is the way to roll with that to make the required like percentage of people that need to vote be really, really low and then have the like of the people who vote, say 50% or 67% of those to pass? Is that the way to like make sure proposals don't just die because they didn't meet the minimum like contract requirements?
I think so, yeah. In the Moloch contracts, there is no quorum. So like it's zero, like whoever, how many votes there are, that's enough.
Oh, interesting. Thank you.
And I wanted to ask you, how do you vote and like how do you in general make decisions in the Bloom network?
In reality, so far, it's like pure anarchy based on trusting each other to, you know, be responsible and knowing what leadership experience and domain knowledge that each of us have so that we check in with each other when we need to take an action that we're not sure we have all the information we need to make the right decision. It's been very organic and literally just based on like Zoom calls or phone calls or emails and checking in with each other. And when something arises, like, oh, we actually need these four people to kind of help make this decision together. And we've been small enough and have such a deep set of relationships with each other. Basically, and by we, I mean the local organizers around the world, because on one level, those people, I think, have more power than once people become formally members. We're kind of just starting to have a formal membership program. Those folks will vote too, but we have kind of like these different, once we start to formalize it and allow the members who aren't local organizers to also participate in the decision making in a formalized way, there's kind of, we've actually been thinking about eliminating the things that people have to vote on just to like conserve everyone's bandwidth. So you know, having like working groups that they have the autonomy to make their decision on this, and the way to keep that in sync with the network is to have open loops so that there's an audibility between that team and other teams or the network as a whole, enough that there's like some kind of loose representation happening. And I don't think we like super have to formalize that. That'll be one of the things that as we develop the DAO, we'll be kind of feeling into, you know, how much actually has to be crystallized and how much is functional. But yeah, the working group should have autonomy. When they are establishing their parameters for their task, so for example, there's a sponsor team on Bloom. So like companies can sponsor our monthly theme, for example. And we have currently a rule that if we're going to accept a sponsorship that's more than $10,000, that team needs to kind of like check through. We have this screen for partners so that they're at least transparent with our community. Like, okay, we're going to accept money from a company that's like actually pretty extractive, but they want to support this project for a reason we believe is good. And is they have like this one initiative that is actually like pushing the front on regenerative stuff. So we're going to be transparent. Like, yes, we know there are issues here, but this is the decision that we've made and think this is a mutually beneficial thing that should happen. But allow them to go quickly so that they like don't lose the sale. So that's like a very like concrete example of how those kinds of permissions would be done. But we want to have a yearly cycle once we have enough capacity to cover like the basic operational team to like keep the network flowing and together. And so we have capacity to like help new chapters form and stuff. We want to open up a yearly cycle of participatory budgeting where, in say May every year, everyone can submit proposals for like a program they want the network to run or like a franchise they want to develop that local chapters could start to have a revenue stream where they are. So like a local micro manufacturing facility for biodegradable plastic alternatives or, you know, I don't know, that's like a funny example, but, or they could propose, you know, given our goals as an organization to decentralize power and increase regenerative actions happening, we think that we should support this indigenous coalition in South America who's doing a really good job pushing back deforestation in the Amazon. So we want to propose that we allocate, say, 30 grand from this budget this year. Well, that, depending, that may actually be more destabilizing than helpful in a context like that, but whatever, like some amount of money and or resources because this is important. So in that way, it can be like continue to be a hybrid kind of mutual incubation / kind of like granting and support mesh for the broader like interconnected process of kind of transforming extractive structures into like healthy regenerative systems.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, I guess it always comes down to the treasury allocation to be the most problematic. Like everything else, you can just give autonomy to the local chapters and local teams and just tell them, yeah, do whatever you think is the best. But then there's this common pot of money that needs to be allocated to all these teams. And then this is where the most problematic to decide.
Yeah, and we might end up doing it because we'll have local plumes, we'll have eventually their own DAOs, or we'll just handle the membership finances for them. But a percentage of people's memberships will go directly to their local chapter team for them to decide how to allocate it, whether it's for like event production or to pay themselves for their time, or they need a bunch of shovels to plant a garden, I don't know. And then a percentage of that will go to international. And what we might do is like not require the whole network to have to decide on what to do with that treasury, but again, like partition off percentages of it. And again, it's a trust thing and with who has power to decide those percentages, which we're really, really, really careful about who has leadership positions in Bloom Network. So like who is the working group lead, who are our wisdom council members who make any kind of decision that's going to have like a huge impact on the network that requires a lot of like really deep knowledge that a new person would, you know, that we represent representation of new people, but they won't have the depth of context to make an informed decision. But we're really careful about allocating leadership positions just because it's, I think it's really common in activist communities for people to see, because there's not gatekeeping, usually people will come forward wanting to take control of a thing, either because they're coming from a place of trauma or wanting to act out some kind of control dynamic, or especially with Evolver, was very heavily foregrounded the role of psychedelics in, like, that was a lot of what brought us together. And unfortunately, it brought forth, like, a lot of people who were struggling with schizophrenia and other kinds of sensitivities, where there's a lot of personality disorders showing up and a lot of narcissism. I think that happens in New Age communities, possibly also activist communities, but New Age communities tend to extremely attract these, like, narcissistic personalities. Yeah. But yeah, so all those kind of, like, people dynamics and things we've learned over time to be careful that we actually know a person really well. So there's this very human element to our governance structures that comes from really, like, 10 years of R&D across, like, activism communities across the whole world. And not just activism communities, but a lot of our people, like, work in federal and state government in their countries and are, like, CEOs of companies and do other interesting, like, management and our art stuff. So we just have a lot of, like, contextual experiences in different kind of organizational and leadership structures. So we've been able to kind of see where the broken parts are, but a lot of, like, subtleties in terms of how to move through them, short of completely, like, autonomous and decentralized. Like, in our case, there, for security reasons, there has to be some kind of hierarchy architectures in place, though also making sure that they're, like, symbiotic and the power is distributed and not going to fuck with things. So, like, we're trying to really also make that massageable by the network. So hopefully as we scale quickly, which I think will happen, we'll be able to maintain and respond and roll with any kind of changes to those kinds of, like, permission and leadership and resource sharing structures that need to come into place. There's one more specific point I wanted to say in there, but I don't remember what it was.
I think this is all super important, and this is, like, that's something that the DAO community can learn from you, because I see the DAO space kind of split, and I sense a meme war coming, because there's this sort of split in the community between the people who think about DAOs as like a technology and the people who see DAOs as a philosophy. I actually did a poll, and in my poll it was 70-30, like, philosophy versus technology. But yeah, like, yeah, there's different types of decentralizations, and then, like, one is political and the other is architectural. And yeah, a lot of people will see DAOs more and more as, like, just the architectural decentralization. Like, the DAO itself is decentralized, but we still do token weighted voting. So it comes down basically just to, like, decentralized corporations, which, like, that's not what I'm here for. And I think many people are, that's not what they're here for. And yeah, I think there's a lot to learn, like, from people like you that have been running decentralized organizations for years before the DAOs existed. And that should help the people who don't really know what they're doing, that are starting, like, token weighted voting DAOs, just because that's easiest to do. And yeah, hopefully we can avoid this pitfall of just recreating the same old systems on decentralized technology.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I've been really, really, really grateful to meet Metagame. And I think the DAO Rush Week is where I first kind of bumped into your guys' membrane. And yeah, in the same sense, like I described, people in our community not being able to filter signal from noise. Like, that's been true for me too, I think. Like, finding where is that intersection of people who are iterating with the technological architectures and, you know, deep experience of governance and economic innovation coming from, like, diverse experiential and contextual backgrounds. So yeah, it's been really awesome to realize that you guys are working on the kind of real world use case sorts of things. I don't know how to use the vocabulary exactly, but, like, it seems like there's a lot of, yeah, synergy, and I'm excited to stay connected and yeah, meet more people who are, like, thinking in a level-headed way about these sorts of dynamics. Yeah.
Awesome. Good things coming. I think this is a good note to end it on. One last thing would be that question that I ask every guest is that if you had to give one advice to metagame, what would it be?
I don't know, I would just say keep playing. Like, it seems like it's working. keep the game on.
Awesome. And you're just in time because my headphones are dying. I just received a second warning.
All right, high five, high tentacle.
All right, high five.
Two tentacles, high five.
Do you believe it's morning? I'm alive, but that's the last thing on my mind.